Thanks for that introduction. So we're going to talk about interviewing skills today. Before I get there, I just want to get a sense of, well, before I get there, there's some empty seats and there's a lot of people standing in the back. If you have an empty seat next to you, can you raise your hand so folks have the opportunity to come find seats? It's going to be an hour. I'm going to be standing on my feet. I don't want you to have to do that. So go find those empty seats. Okay, now put your hand down if there's an empty seat next to you, because now you're going to confuse me. So I want to get a sense of who's in the crowd as well. So how about, do we have undergrads in the crowd? A lot of undergrads. We have grad students, postdocs, people who are in careers already, out of their training. Okay, so how about who has an interview scheduled right now? Anybody? Good, a few folks, good for you. How about applying for jobs, hoping to get an interview very, very soon? Okay. Applying for jobs in the next 6 months, next year. Applying for jobs in a couple years. We'll apply for jobs sometime in the future. Has anybody not raised their hand yet? Good, okay. So we're gonna talk about interviewing skills. Before I get there, I'm gonna tell you a little bit about AAAS if you're not familiar with us. So AAAS is the American Association for the Advancement of Science. They are happy to send me on the road to go talk to folks about career issues. But the deal is you have to listen for 2 minutes for me to tell you who we are. So AAAS is the American Association for the Advancement of Science. What we're most well known for is our journal, Science. You might have heard of it. We're actually a large international nonprofit organization. So we are the largest interdisciplinary science organization in the world. And officially our motto is about advancing science, engineering, and innovation. It sounds a little obtuse, but we do all kinds of things. We do a lot of things related to science workforce issues, from stuff working with kids, trying to get them interested in careers in science, working with students and postdocs, thinking about career development issues, thinking about diversifying the science workforce, all the way to working with retirees and helping them figure out how they can use their science in their world now. We also do a lot of things related to science and policy, science and international issues, science and human rights, science and ethics, science and religion. If there's some issue that you can think about, there's probably somebody in our building, I'd like to say, who's worried about it or thinks about it. The other thing I'll point out, and there's some information about this up here on the table too, so please come grab this afterwards, is our website, Science Careers. Anybody familiar with Science Careers? Excellent. If you haven't gone and visited it, I highly recommend it. So Science Careers is about 15 years old now. It was one of the first dedicated places to give it career information about specifically science careers. It's targeted towards mostly graduate students and postdocs. There's some information for undergrads on there as well. But it's got all kinds of articles on there. Every Friday, about 3 new articles on different career-related things go up. So some of them will directly look at the job search, how to network, how to write your resume or CV. Others will explore different career options that are available for you. So that's a great resource. There's also a forum on there where you can go pose career-related questions, and we have a really great group of volunteers that actually answer those questions. And there's job ads on there as well. So that's all I'll say about that. I'll also mention the slides are online, so if you see something really fabulous on the slide and you don't want to write it down, you go to sciencecareers.org/outreach, which is on the bottom of the slide, which I realize some of you in the back probably can't see. You can download them later. So I've got some quotes in here to help us think about interviewing. And this first one is from this guy, Martin Yates, who wrote this book, Malcolm Dead. And Martin says, there are two terrible places to be in an interview. Sitting in front of the desk, wondering what on earth is going to happen next, and sitting behind the desk, asking the questions. The average interviewer dreads the meeting almost as much as the interviewee. And I like to start out with this, because I think a lot of times when we're talking about interviews, we think of it as like this interrogation. It's this test. I've got to get in there, and I've got to perform and prove to them that they should give me the job. But the reality is that they're anxious as well. They're anxious because they're hoping that you're going to be somebody they want to hire. They're hoping that once they've figured out they do want to hire you, you actually want to come work for them. So they're trying to make a good impression on you, too. So I like to think of it as a conversation. It's a conversation between you and an employer. You're both sizing each other up, determining whether this is the right fit for you and whether you're the right fit for the organization. And that pretty much is how the day should go. You should do about 50% of the talking, and they should be doing about 50% of the talking, so that you're there to learn from them as well. Well, we've got a lot we want to accomplish. So this is from Peter Fisk. He's a geoscientist by training. He wrote this book, Put Your Science to Work, which is a really great book as you're starting to think about your job search. And Peter says, the goal of an interview is to get you a job offer, or at least another interview. If you handle the interview well, you'll show the employer that in addition to your outstanding technical qualifications and background, you're a good communicator, an organized, prepared, and logical thinker, and someone who'd add value to the organization. So there's a lot that we're trying to do in the context of this conversation as well. We're trying to show them all of our technical skills, but also who we are as a person, that we're organized, prepared, logical, all of that. So there is some pressure in the situation, undoubtedly. So we're going to pretty much talk about interviewing skills and go chronologically through the interviewing process from when we find out we have an interview all the way through, and we'll talk about negotiation a little bit at the end. If you have questions as we're going, feel free to raise your hand and I'll take them as we go. So what's the point of an interview? We talked about this already a little bit. So you're trying to prove to them that yes, you can do the job, but pretty much they already know you can do the job by the time they bring you in for an interview. They know you've got the technical skills, but at this point they're trying to figure out whether you're going to be a good fit for the organization. And this is one of those amorphous things. It doesn't mean that you're a good fit with your technical skills, but also it means that you're somebody they want to spend a lot of time with. Because if I'm going to hire you and bring you into my organization, we're going to be spending a lot of time together. And I want to make sure that this is somebody who's going to fit in with the culture of my workplace. And your goals, of course, you're there to try and show to them that you have the knowledge that you need, that you bring a lot to the organization, but you're also there to figure out whether this is the job you want. Would you be happy there? So I've got some comics in here from the PhD Comics website. If you've not been to this website, it's a good place to go have a laugh. This is the character Mike. Hello? Good news, Mike, I got you an interview. Oh, what's that, Bob? Do I own a suit? These are tears of joy. So we'll watch Mike as he goes through his interview process as well. So when you find out you have an interview, somebody calls and they say, I'd like to bring you in, or I'd like to do a phone interview with you. I think that's the first time you've got a sign of success on your job search. So it's a good time to step back, pat yourself on the back, give yourself a little high five. You know, it's a little time to celebrate our success, because that's the first sign that somebody's read your cover letter, read your resume, read your CV, and thinks that there's something promising there. So if they call you up and say, we'd love to do a phone interview, make sure you have time to prepare. If they call you up and say, we'd love to bring you in, we need you to write a job talk. Again, that would be mostly for the graduate students and the postdocs in the audience. Make sure that you have time to prepare. They're not just calling you in and saying, let's talk right now. Figure out what type of interview they want to do. So if they bring you in, what do you need to be prepared for? And often they'll ask to start with a phone interview. So if they ask to start with a phone interview, I think a lot of times that can be nerve-wracking because we lose that ability to see the other person, right? It's always harder to have a conversation on the phone than it is in person, where you see each other's body language. Sometimes on the phone, you can't tell when somebody's joking, you interrupt people more. So they can be a little bit more difficult, but keep in mind, just as much as that's creating difficulty for you, it's creating difficulty for the interviewer too. So you're both dealing with that. So if they start off with a phone interview, generally the reason they start with those, of course, it's low cost investment for them. They have to take the time out of their day to talk to you, but they don't have to fly you in anywhere. That's often why they start with that. A couple things to keep in mind with a phone interview that's going to differ from other interviews. Do it somewhere where you're by yourself. If you're going to talk on your cell phone, make sure that's somewhere with good cell phone reception. So a while ago, I was taking the train from DC up to Baltimore. It's a quick train ride. And there was somebody on the train actually doing a phone interview. Now, from my perspective, fascinating. You better bet I was eavesdropping intently to figure out what she was talking about. But a really horrible place to do a phone interview. Not only did she have to repeat herself, the train was loud. I'm sure the person on the other end could hear all the background noise on the train. But she lost the call at one point. As you go through some spots without great cell phone reception. So think about that. Somewhere where you're by yourself, where you can shut the door. If you're at home, put your dog or cat in the other room, because I can hear them meow and bark and all of that. Make sure your kids know you're doing something like that. So be alone, and then being alone is going to make it easier to do the next two things, which are going to sound really goofy. When you're doing a phone interview, they can't see you, so it's okay to be goofy, but generally you sound more confident and when you stand up. So you're going to stand up, you're in your bedroom standing up, and then you're going to smile, because you'll sound a lot more positive, a lot friendlier, and much more like somebody I'd want to work with if you're smiling. There's research that shows this. This is why people who do telemarketing, they're always told to smile when they're doing their job. So when you're doing your phone interview, go to your bedroom, stand up, smile. talking to the phone. The thing to remember that actually makes a phone interview a little bit easier is you can have any notes with you. So we're going to talk a little bit about some preparation you might do if you make notes when you're doing any of that. In a phone interview, I don't know if you're reading off a sheet of paper. So feel free to do that. Feel free to write down as much as you want, as long as it's not interrupting the phone conversation. So hopefully you do that phone interview, and then they call you back and say, we'd like to bring you in for an in-person interview. We'll talk a little bit about some of the logistics. We'll talk about how we can prepare for what's actually going to go on in terms of interview content. And then we'll talk a little bit about what kind of research we can do before we show up for an interview. So the first thing, figure out how you're going to get there, whether that's travel, whether it's driving directions, figure out what traffic's like. Particularly if you're going to a city you're unfamiliar with, it may be much worse than you're used to. Give yourself plenty of time to get there. One of the things I always like to tell people is give yourself plenty of time to get there. It's fine if you get there a half hour early, but when you get there a half hour early, you don't walk in. You walk in a half hour early and they call me and they say, you know, your interviewee is here. You're interrupting me. I'm not ready for you yet. I'm going to be a little annoyed. I'm going to feel anxious about leaving you down waiting for me in the lobby. So don't start the interview off on that foot. If you want to be about 5 to 10 minutes early, that's fine. Don't be much earlier than that. If you're earlier than that, go for a nice walk. Go to the coffee shop. Don't get a cup of caffeinated coffee. Get a cup of chamomile tea, right? Because we don't want to be all jittery in our interview. The other thing you might want to think about before you walk in that first day is one of the ways we often, our first introduction to people, we shake people's hands, and that's one of the first times we can show them what a confident person we are. We really like handshakes in this country, and we judge people based on them because it's one of those ways we get a first impression. So think a little bit about your handshake. What makes a good handshake?
Firm.
Firm, yeah. What else?
Dry,
yes. Okay. You can really discreetly wipe your hand on your pants before you pass it to me. Particularly if you're anxious and your hands are sweaty, just do a little wipe. It's appreciated. What else was I? What was that?
Quick.
Quick. Yeah. 1 to 2 pumps and then we're done, right? You're not holding my hand. There's that interminal handshake, and then we're not doing that. Not really cold. So that might be something to think about. If your hands are really cold when you walk into the building, or apologize if you have a cold hand. What else?
Web to web. Your thumbs.
Yeah, web to web. So like actually grabbing my hand. Don't just grab my fingertips. What else makes a good handshake?
Eye contact.
Maybe even smiling. Like it's nice to meet me. The other thing, nobody said this one yet, not too firm, right? Sometimes you get the hand-crushing handshake. I don't need that either. Like, just enough pressure. So what I want to do right now, take a second. You're going to be shaking a lot of hands while you're here this week, so we may as well get started now. Shake the hand of the person next to you. Give them a little feedback on the handshake. Sometimes that's a little bit harder. So really spending some time thinking about that. Now, whether that means doing some mock interviews with folks who are willing to help you out, or it might also mean getting involved in a group like Toastmasters. So Toastmasters is an international organization. They have chapters all over. Particularly universities seem to have Toastmasters chapters. And they do a lot of impromptu speaking exercises, getting you comfortable thinking on your feet, so when somebody asks you a question, you're a little bit more comfortable answering them. What kind of grown man doesn't own a suit? What about my wedding suit? We eloped in Las Vegas, remember? You wore shorts.
It's a little big. It's on sale. We'll take it. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but I'm not sure the purple suit is the correct direction to go. So the other thing you probably want to think about are some common interview questions, and I've got a couple of them up here. There's some on the handout up here at the front of the room. I'm not sure I have enough of these handouts to go around, but they are all online, sciencecareers.org/outreach. So you want to think a little bit about these common interview questions. Without a doubt, somebody is going to say to you when you sit down in somebody's desk, and you're probably going to be talking to multiple people over the course of the day, somebody is going to say, tell me about yourself. Without a doubt, and you should be prepared to respond to that. You should also be prepared to talk about your strengths and your weaknesses. Again, that can be a little bit more uncomfortable for some of us to talk about, particularly the weakness question. I'll tell you, before I ever went for a job interview, I thought that was a joke. I didn't think anybody ever really asked that question, but they do. And you should be prepared to respond to it with something other than, I work too hard, right? You should be prepared to actually tell me about a legitimate weakness, because if you can't tell me that you have any weaknesses, you don't seem like a very self-aware person. You don't seem like a person who's going to be able to fix a problem when they encounter it, because you don't know that there are any problems, right? So you should be prepared to talk about a weakness, but when you tell me what that weakness is, then tell me, not only am I aware of it, I'm doing something to get better at it, and here's how I know I've gotten better. You should be able to tell me why you want to come work for me. Why do you want this job? And it should be something better than, I'm desperate, right? And remember, you're there to tell this employer not just why you want the job, but also how you're going to make their lives easier. So being prepared to answer some of this, if any of you are thinking about leaving research, doing something other than research, sometimes folks will say, you know, I expect folks with a PhD to go take academic tenure track jobs. Why aren't you taking that job? And you should have a nice, positive answer, other than a bitter, there aren't enough tenure-track jobs out there for the number of scientists that they're training in this country. Response.
But I have a question.
Yeah.
Give us an example of a weakness.
So I'll give you, actually, when somebody asked me on a job interview, the weakness I gave is, as a graduate student, I was planning workshops like this. And you know, you've been to enough workshops like this, that at the end, there's an evaluation form handed out. And I hated dealing with evaluation data. I hated it. I took it so personally, and I just would avoid it because I didn't want to read it. So I learned that's why I said I don't like dealing with evaluation data, because I take it personally. Anything somebody says critical, I take it really personally. I internalize it. It makes me feel bad. So I've learned I need to look at it, spend a day getting that out of my system, and then I can come back and do the project, rather than just putting it off and putting it off. Once you look, it's never as bad as you think it might be before you read it. So something like that, anything that says, I have a weakness. So somebody last week, I was brainstorming this question with somebody else, and they said, well, I guess I'm really bad at keeping up with email. Like, I'm not really good at responding to email. And sometimes it just builds up. And I said, okay, well, you're aware of it. You know that weakness, so you tell me. I'm aware that I'm really bad with email. But I've been trying to set deadlines for myself of making sure that all the emails a week, or you know, have been in my inbox for a week, I'm dealing with them, whatever. Just saying that you know that there's some weakness out there, and it can be something really specific like that, and then some kind of strategy to make that better. The other kind of question, and this, you won't necessarily see this so much if you're applying for academic type jobs, but particularly in industry, folks really like to ask these behavioral interview questions. And again, if you do a Google search, you can find all kinds of examples of behavioral interview questions. But there's something to tell, there are questions that will ask me to tell you, you ask you to tell me how you would behave in a particular situation. So these things like, tell me about a time you've been a part of a project team. Tell me about a time you dealt with a difficult person. Again, these are the kind of things that we can't necessarily be prepared for every possible question they can hand at you. These are just some examples, but being prepared to talk about experiences you've had at work. Generally, when these questions come up, an interviewer will not be surprised if you take a second to think about it before you just start talking, because these aren't necessarily the types of things that are on the tip of your tongue. Mike's in his job interview. Come on in, Mike. Have a seat. I have to say we're very impressed with your resume. Right on. Although, I think you made a typo. It says here you started grad school in the 1980s. Yeah, that's a mistake. The typo or starting grad school? The other thing you want to think about before you walk in that day is questions that you have for them. And again, This is just a generic list, but based on the particular job and the particular company, you should have some other questions on your list. But you want to know more about the particular job. You want to know, what will my career look like if I take this job? Again, if you're applying for academic type jobs, you pretty much know what your career path will look like. But in industry, that question's not always as clear. What are they going to do to help you with your own professional development? Figuring out future goals for the organization, for the department. I think you're going to talk to a lot of people that day, too. And one of the things I like to ask every person in the context of an interview is, tell me about your role here, and tell me about how you and I would interact if I were to take this job. Because you're going to be meeting a lot of people, it can be confusing, and I think that gives you a better sense of the structure. The last thing is, I think probably the most important thing to find out that day. Yes, it's important whether you would like this job, whether the actual duties of the job appeal to you, but generally you have a pretty good sense of that before you walk into interview. I think what's most important to figure out is, what's the culture like in the organization? And you're never going to walk up to somebody and say, what's the culture like here, right? But there's a lot of ways you can ask that question. What's it like to work here? Do you like working here? How well does the team work together? You know, a lot of those sorts of questions to get at, what is it like to be here every day, other than the, you know, company message about all of our duties and how we work together and whatever. But asking some of those sorts of questions. They might also ask you to do a job talk. Again, this would be more for research-based jobs, but you may see it in other positions as well. So when I came to interview for my current position involves a lot of public speaking. You better bet that they asked me to be prepared to talk to them, because they were going to hire somebody to do public speaking that they've never seen speak. So if they ask you to do a job talk, make sure you know what they're asking for. How long will you have? Are you being asked to prepare a class for undergraduates? Are you being asked to prepare a research talk? Who's going to be in the audience? Will it be scientists? Will not everybody in the audience be scientists? Will they be people in your particular field? Will it be a more broad audience? You may also want to tailor it for the particular company or the particular organization based on who they're looking to hire, based on what their goals are. And practice. You've all given talks before. You know when you give a talk that it runs much smoother after you've given it a few times than that first time that you're struggling through it. So practice, find folks who will do a mock job talk with you, particularly because what's going to be really important to find out from an audience is, what kinds of questions am I going to get? So if you know what kinds of questions you're likely to get asked, you'll know how to respond to them much better than if you're totally blindsided by something. And then I think probably the most important thing before you show up that day, and I think it's evident by the fact that I used 3 exclamation points at the top of this, do your research. If you show up at this interview and somebody says, so what do you know about our company? You want to be able to say something. If they say, so what do you know about our company? And you say, well, not a lot. It's certainly not going to impress me. It's certainly not going to make me think that you really want to work for me. So figure things out about the organization. You can figure out things like vital facts of the organization, what their mission is, all that kind of stuff on their websites. But there's some other ways you can get at information as well. Do a Google News search. How has this company been in the news lately? Is it for things like layoffs? Have they been in the news for some new patent? What have they been in the news for? Also, see if you can figure out things about that company culture and work atmosphere issue that we were talking about earlier. You're probably not going to find that online. You might if you can find a profile of somebody who's worked at that company. So again, that might turn up in Google News. You might also find that the most easiest way to find that is through networking. So find somebody who works for that organization. Whether you call up a bunch of your contacts and say, hey, do you know anybody who works at this company? Do you know anybody who works at this university? I think the easiest way to find somebody who works at a particular company is to get on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn, if you're not familiar with it, is like the professional world's Facebook. Once you are on LinkedIn and build a network on LinkedIn, you can then search through your contact contacts. So if I'm looking for somebody who works at, say, Monsanto, I can search through the Rolodexes of all the people I'm connected to and see if somebody has one of those connections. If I see that somebody has a connection there, I can then say, hey, can you introduce me to so-and-so? I really want to ask him about what it's like to work at Monsanto. So that's one way to get at it. Another couple things you should think about researching before you get there, figure out what their competitors are doing. What's really hot in the field? That could be indications of future directions for the company you're talking to. You also should be prepared to talk about salary. It is not uncommon for salary to come up in the context of an interview. We'll talk a little bit more about negotiation later, but you should have done some research so that if salary comes up, you know how to respond. And hey, Mike, here's a puzzle we give to all of our interviewees. Suppose any number of people have X coins, but none of them have pockets. How many eggs must they break to cross the river, assuming the fox will eat the chicken? Four? Wow, that's right. How'd you do it?
I read it on the internet.
That's PhD training. So generally, I don't recommend reading common interview questions and great answers to them, but apparently that worked out for Mike. So here's a quote. I like to talk about appearance at interviews, and this is again from Peter Fisk. And he says, "You have to admit, for most other animals in nature, appearance is a life or death issue. Animals judge each other's health, strength, and parental fitness, not by subjecting their potential mates to an interview, but by examining certain external qualities. People evaluate each other all the time using similar traits." Okay, so as much as you might be thinking, gosh darn it, I don't want to put a suit on, this is part of how we judge each other. Whether we want to or not, we judge each other based on appearance. So you should have that suit on. If you think you're going to apply to or interview at some company where a suit would really, really be too formal, see if you can use your network and ask around and verify that that's the truth before you show up in something other than a suit. If you show up in a suit, you can always do things to make it a little less casual if you do get there and you're way overdressed, right? You can always take off the suit jacket. Guys can take off the tie. That means women wear a shirt under your suit jacket so you can take it off, not a little camisole, something like that. So the day of your interview, show up with energy, show up enthusiastic. I want to hire somebody who's enthusiastic. Dress appropriately, as we said. And that also goes for other grooming, right? Comb your hair, polish your shoes, all of that. Brush your teeth, I want to smell that breath. You know what to do there. Somebody, though, last week I was talking to him and he said, well, I know a guy who wore a suit and then they told him it was too formal. And I said, okay. And then it turned out his friend's suit was white, right? So you're not wearing, like, formal wear. No tuxes, please. Sometimes you'll also hear advice. Sometimes they'll say women have to wear skirt suits because pantsuits aren't dressy enough. Has anybody heard that one? Yeah, I don't think that. I think that's a lie, right? You can wear your pants. Also, sometimes in, like, the legal world, they'll say women have to wear heels. In science, we don't play by those rules, right? So you're fine in your flats. Sometimes you'll also hear folks say in the corporate world, women better wear makeup. Because that, you're not professional unless you're wearing makeup. Again, I don't so much buy into that. As long as you're dressed nicely. Dress nicely and your hair is combed, I think we're good. And make sure you bring anything with you that you need, whether that's your USB drive or a job talk. You might want to bring copies of your resume in case you talk to anybody who hasn't seen them. And give yourself extra time. Again, it's better to be too early and take that walk around the block than to show up late. So what can we do during the interview? We're going to talk a little bit about how we can promote ourselves, answering questions. How do we find out more? Part of our goal is to figure out more. How are we going to figure that out? Nonverbal communication, and then preparing to follow up afterwards. So never assume that the interviewers read your application materials. It's okay to reiterate stuff that's on your CV, but you should be adding to that as well. The other thing to think about, you want to mind your manners. So that means even when you're dealing with people like the administrative staff, being as nice and friendly as you can, because if you're rude to the receptionist, that is going to get back to the hiring manager. And you don't want to lose a job based on something like that. Again, you want to be enthusiastic. I want to hire somebody who's enthusiastic to work for me. And part of that is you're never going to talk negatively, right? So if somebody asks you why you're leaving your current position, you never say, God, it was horrible, right? You always say something like, I'm looking for an opportunity that would allow me to, and collaborate on what the change that you want, what looks positive out in the future, rather than the negative in the past. And again, we're prepared to talk about those weaknesses. Mike, we want to make you a job offer. Sharp analytical skills is one of the reasons we like to hire PhDs. So name your price. Well, in terms of salary, I know what I'm worth, and I will not accept anything less than what I currently make as a grad student. Low expectations is the other reason. The other thing you want to keep in mind, you're trying to answer questions as best you can. One thing to keep in mind, if you need to, pause for thought, right? If it's not like a test. If I ask you a question, you don't have to answer right away. Take a second and collect your thoughts so that your answer is organized and logical. Again, it's not a test, so if I ask you a question and you don't understand it, it's okay to say, I'm not sure what you're asking. Do you want to know blah, 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 or blah, 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 right? Asking for that clarification rather than acting like it's a test. I think the other thing to keep in mind as you're talking to people, these can be really long, tiring days. Try to stay in the moment. and be involved and active and paying attention the entire time. Don't start daydreaming, looking out the window when people are talking. Another thing to keep in mind is be mindful to how long your answers to questions are. About 2 minutes is a good rule of thumb. You don't really want to talk longer than that on any given question because you don't have that much time to talk to all the people that they're trying to get you to talk to that day. And if you talk longer, it doesn't show that you know good give and take. So a while ago, I was talking to a recruiter, and because she's a recruiter, she was sitting in on a job interview with one of her potential applicants. And so they said, "Tell me about yourself." And so then he spoke for 20 minutes. And then at the end of that, they said, "Well, it was nice talking to you. We'll be in touch." Right? And that was the end of the interview. So if you talk for your 2 minutes and you feel like, gosh, I still have so many interesting things to say, you can always say, "Do you want to hear more? Do you want to know more about that?" Gives me an option to say yes or no. Of course, you never want to lie about anything. Lying in the context of a job interview or on a job application can often be grounds for firing you, so never a good idea. Certainly not going to reflect well on you if I figure out that you're lying. We'll talk about negotiation in a minute, but if salary comes up, if they say, "So how much would you like to be paid?" in the context of an interview, don't say anything. Just say something like, "I'd like to be paid commensurate with my experience," and leave it there. We'll talk more about that in a minute. The other thing you should be prepared for, there are certain questions they are not supposed to ask you in the context of an interview. So they are not supposed to ask about things like marital status, parental status, religion, those sorts of things. That's not to say they don't come up. We were talking about this, as a matter of fact, before the session. They come up a lot. They particularly come up during academic interviews or during parts of an interview that might be more informal. So they might say, "Hey, let's go out to lunch. You're not sitting in the office. Everybody relaxes a little bit." And then it's just natural to say to somebody, "So do you have kids?" Right? You don't have to answer them. There's a lot of fear of answering these questions and whether, for example, a company will be less likely to hire a woman who has kids because clearly she's not going to be as committed to her job. Right? That's the idea. So if the questions come up, you don't want to say, "Well, that's an illegal question." Clearly the wrong tactic to take. And you know, the thing is, a lot of folks may not remember the training that they got that told them they're not supposed to ask these questions. But it's nicer to say something like, if somebody says, "Do you have kids?" say, "You know, what I do when I'm not at work isn't going to affect my job performance. I'm a really dedicated employee." Kind of deflecting the question. And then ask another question to just totally change the subject. "Tell me about what it's like," you know, whatever. But again, if those come up, you can also decide to answer them. I talked to one woman when I was doing my dissertation research. She was a scientist, and she was married to another scientist. And she said, "You know, if it came up and somebody said, 'Do you have kids?' and she saw that as an opportunity to talk about work-life balance issues, if that particular organization really wasn't going to hire her because she had kids or because she had a husband, it wasn't the kind of organization she wanted to work for." You know, so I think that's something to keep in mind as well. Oops, I went back the wrong way. So the other thing is, remember, you're there to find out more. So you're trying to have a conversation with these folks and figure out more about this job. So make sure that you get a chance to ask your prepared questions. Generally, interviewers will say at some point, "Do you have any questions for me?" You can pull out that list if you've got it on paper with you in aggregate, but make sure you get a chance to ask those questions. If you don't get a chance, as they're trying to rush you out the door, say, "You know, I have some questions for you." And hopefully they'll be prepared to respond to them. The other thing I recommend doing throughout the day is checking in with yourself. As you're learning more about this organization, as you're meeting people, is this really somewhere you want to be? But also think about things like, how has the whole day gone? Has it been well organized? Has it been going smoothly? Does everybody seem happy to work here? And think about those kind of more intangible things as well. So the other thing to keep in mind throughout the day is nonverbal communication. We already talked about handshakes. Another thing to think about is eye contact. We love eye contact in the US. Make sure you're making lots of eye contact. We talked about staying focused. The other thing is posture. Not something we think about a lot, but if you have good, erect posture, it shows confidence versus somebody who's slumped in the chair, right? So thinking about that posture, thinking about fidgeting. When we're anxious, it's a really natural thing to do to fidget, or those people that tap their toes, right? It's like, that's really annoying if I'm trying to have a conversation with you. Or the person who picks stuff up off my desk to start playing with it. Keep that in mind. It's the one day you really just need to try and keep that in check, not fidget, stay focused on the conversation. The other thing to make sure you're doing is speaking clearly. So if I can't hear you, if I can't understand you, if you're mumbling, it's not going to make me want to hire you. So making sure that you're speaking as clearly to me so that I can actually hear you and understand what you're saying. Because Because I like to ask every couple minutes, what? What'd you say?
Right?
Not really fun. Mike, this is what we're prepared to pay you to come work for us. This is 10 times what I make as a grad student. Welcome to the real world.
I need to send my friends off.
The other thing you want to make sure you're doing in the context of that day is figuring out how the process is going to proceed. So at the end of the day, just say something like, when should I expect to hear from you? Also make sure to get business cards from the folks that you talk to. That way you can follow up with them if you don't hear from them by the time that they said they would get back to you. But it also gives you a chance to write some thank you notes. So when you get home that night, write some notes. Write some notes about how the day went. Write some notes about what you learned about the particular job, your feelings throughout the day, so that when they call you back, you remember whether or not this is the kind of place you wanted to be. Remember any additional questions you might have had. The other thing you should do that night, yeah?
Should thank you notes be written via email or snail mail?
I was just getting there. That was my next sentence. The other thing you should do when you get home is write those thank you notes. And you can write them via email, you can write them via snail mail. I think the most important thing is that you write me a thank you note. I have had a recruiter say, man, when I get a snail mail thank you note, that just makes me feel pretty good, right? Because I don't get that many handwritten notes in my inbox. At the same time, an email gets to them faster. So you may get to them before they have a chance to interview somebody else. I don't think how I get that thank you note is going to determine whether or not I hire you. I just want you to send a thank you note. And there's a few things you can do in that thank you note. Again, express your enthusiasm for the job. It's also a chance to clarify anything that might have come up during the context of the day. Or send additional materials. So if you're talking about something, maybe a paper you wrote, you can send that over email in the thank you note. Yeah.
I was just going to say, you know with the snail mail, it's going to get there. Sometimes the email, if it's not from a regular source, doesn't make it through the filters. You might never know that you actually did follow up.
So occasionally email goes in those spam filters, but occasionally mail gets lost too. I had some receipts I sent somebody to reimburse recently that got lost. But you're right. That does make it trickier. Sometimes on email programs, you can request return receipt, like tell me when somebody opens an email. You could do both if you're really worried about it. And I don't really think there's a wrong answer, but you're right. Sometimes spam filters can be a concern. And oftentimes, you can be prepared for that. It's those things like misspellings and stuff that catch the spam filters, but that's a good point. I'm thinking through this as I'm talking. Thank you note. It doesn't just need to be one person. So if I was particularly applying to an academic job, I would, the hiring committee, the search committee, maybe folks who are closely aligned with my research interests.
So you send individual notes.
Yeah, and academia, I think I would veer towards the side of emails, just quick emails, it's nice to meet you, versus an industry where I might be more likely to send that snail mail note, just because of the cultural differences between academia and industry. The other thing to keep in mind, you ask them at the interview, when should I expect to hear from you? If that day comes and passes and you haven't heard from them, that's your chance to reach back out to them. You can send an email or you can make a phone call. If you send an email and they don't respond to it, give it a few days, and then go ahead and make the phone call. Because once you get somebody on the phone, it's really hard for them to not give you an answer. Now, don't leave a message if you call, though, right? Because you're trying to get them on the phone to get them the answer. So if I get several voicemails from you because you keep playing wrong sales every time you call and I don't pick up the phone, that's going to start to seem like somebody's pestering me, right? So 1 to 2 times try and contact me. If you start contacting 3, 4, 5, 6 times, then you start to seem like somebody's pestering me. Hey, how'd the interview go? I don't think it's going to work out. Oh, that's okay, honey. I'm sure something will come up soon. We have faith in you. You don't mind going to public schools, do you? So, okay, not a very funny comic, but I think the point here is that you're not going to get every job that you interview for. And so walking away from that interview and figuring out what you can learn from that experience, what you can take to the next interview you go to, is going to be what's really important. So the other thing I said we talked about negotiation here at the end, do your research. There's several places you can go do some research on salary information. There are websites like salary.com that will have some common salary surveys or salary numbers for different sorts of job titles. The Chronicle of Higher Ed is a good place to go for higher education jobs. If you're applying to government jobs or state universities, a lot of times they post, they are required to post pay scale places, so you can find that. It can be tricky to find, but it exists. You can also look at government pay scales if you can figure out approximately what pay grade you would get hired into. Generally, I tell a recent PhD to look somewhere around a GS-12 to a GS-13, and then you can look at locality scales. So a job in Lexington would pay different than a job in Washington, D.C. from San Francisco. Maybe. I don't know Lexington that well.
I was just going to say the libraries, if you apply for academia, they have the budgets for the department, so you can actually pull up the library and ask for that budget because it's public information. So this way you know which one of the department is.
People have also told me similarly to rifle through grant applications that are public information as well.
The Tri-Societies did a survey too, and if you participate in the salary survey, you can get the results from it.
Okay. That's good to know.
Isn't it extremely difficult to get hired into the NRCS or the BLM or the NRCS or whatever, USGS at like the GS 12, 11 grade? Don't they do a lot of internal promotions?
Do you know, I have to say I'm not really familiar with those particular organizations. What I work with, I do a lot of my work with biomedical scientists, and there we talk about 12 to 13.
But like 12 to 13 is like a six-figure salary, right?
No.
No.
How much is a GS 12 start?
So do you know, is it easy to get hired at a 12th level, or do they come up from within?
They do both.
And those salaries too will differ based on location. So that actually has a pretty big influence when you're looking at government pay scales. So the thing you do want to try and do is not name a number first. So there is research out there that says whoever names a number first actually loses out in the interaction. So if I name a number before they do, I'm going to make less money. If I wait for them to name a number, I'm going to make more money. Generally what the research suggests. Now that can be a little bit tricky. One of the things you're starting to see more is requests for salary ranges in a cover letter. Has anybody seen this? So there's a couple ways you can handle that. A lot of folks will tell you when you see that, just don't put it in. Put in something like, I'd like to be paid commensurate with my experience. Now, I know on the other hand that there are some companies that if you don't give them that salary range in the cover letter, they're going to chuck your application. So I think that's a question you have to ask yourself. Would I rather do my research ahead of time, figure out what I think an appropriate salary range might be, and put that in my cover letter and have them at least look at my application, or do I want to risk them throwing out my application because I wouldn't give them that salary range? I can't answer that question for you. It's a personal choice you have to make and decide what's going to be more important to you. But I think you can do some research to come up with an educated salary range to put in the cover letter. I've also had folks say, well, can I just make it a really big range? I'd like to be paid $10,000 to $10 million. Okay, but I'm not going to take that very seriously. And I'll tell you, generally, when you give one of those salary ranges, I'm going to pay you on the low end of that salary range because you've told me you'll be satisfied with what's on the low end. Now, if you do one of those sorts of cover letters, they bring you in for an interview, and then you do your research or you talk to somebody and you find out, oh my God, I just didn't ask for enough money. You can always come back to me later and say, you know, I gave you a salary range in my cover letter and it was based on some research, but I've talked to some other people and based on X, Y, and Z, I actually think that number was too low and I'd like to adjust it upwards. Okay, you can always come back with that later. Don't plan to do that. Don't plan to do like a bait and switch. But if you figure out the number really was wrong, you can come back and try to negotiate it. And as a matter of fact, that's a good strategy to use with negotiation in general. So when they come to you and they give you an offer, if you want, in order to get paid more, you want to remind them of what you're bringing to the table, the skills and abilities you have, how you're going to help that company. But then also say to them, based on research, I think my salary range should be X, Y, and Z because this is what folks get paid in these sorts of ranges. The other thing to keep in mind, another good way to find out about salaries is networking. So you never walk up to somebody and say, how much money do you make, right? But you can always walk up to somebody and say, somebody you know, you've met, had a conversation with, and say, I'm applying for this job at this company. Do you have any sense what I should expect to make as an entry-level person in this field? The other thing to keep in mind about negotiation, and particularly this applies to the academic environment, it's about more than just salaries, right? So in the academic environment, we're particularly talking about things like startup packages, but you can also negotiate things like vacation time, telecommuting time,
retirement packages.
Nothing.
Start date, yeah, absolutely. Start date is a big one that you can negotiate as well. So there are other things that are up for negotiation. Of course, salary is the one that's going to stay with you for a while. So something to think about. One final thought here, and this is from Peter. Yes?
Is it okay to say you'll think about the number that they give you and say, how about this? Is it okay to say, I need to think about it?
Yeah, absolutely. You shouldn't respond. You don't necessarily need to respond. But that's one of the reasons I would try and do some research before you walk into that interview, so that when they do say a number, you know immediately whether that's somewhere in the range of what's the case.
Could you try to repeat the questions after somebody asks you?
He was asking whether you can ask for some time to think about it. When they give you a number, can you say, you know, I'd like to go home and do my research? And absolutely, you don't need to tell them right on the spot, yes or no, based on that number. So one final thought from our friend Peter Fisk again, he says, be yourself. People tend to do a poor imitation of anything else. And I think that's something to keep in mind. You want to work at a company that wants you for who you are, not for not working somewhere where you put on a fake face every day because that's the kind of employee they want. So I think really, you're educated, smart people, you know what you're doing. If you just walk in and you're that person, that's really how you're going to come off best. Rather than trying to walk in and trying to put on some mask or some facade showing me that you're somebody else because you think that's what I want, that's just going to come off as fake. So really, it's not rocket science. Just show up, be yourself. And I think the most important thing to remember is the three things. I mean, we just talked about a lot of stuff. We talked for almost an hour there. But if you show up and you're confident and courteous and positive, that's going to be a lot. Because I want to work with somebody who knows what they're doing and is confident about what they're doing, who's going to be nice to the people around them, and who's happy to be there. Right? Those are some of the most important things I think you want to show in a job interview. And remember, you learn from each one. You're not going to get every job you apply to. So again, some resources on our website that I wanted to remind you about. If you go to sciencecareers.org/webinar, we have a series of webinars. They're hour-long discussions looking at some of these topics more in depth. And again, the slides are online at sciencecareers.org/outreach. So with that, I'm happy to take some questions. And
we're going to have the survey. Can you take a minute and send them out? Maybe next time we take your responses and make it better.
The entire interview was just you asking him questions.
Correct.
I would say that's very uncommon. Expect them to at least say, tell me a little bit about who you are. He didn't ask any questions the whole time?
No.
Did you interview with other people as well?
There were some previous, but not in the room.
You know, sometimes you're going to talk to a lot of people in the course of a day. It may just be one person is a little quirky. Maybe they think they get to know enough about you by having you ask questions. I think it's one of those things, like, there's no right answer when it comes to interviews, and you never quite know what to expect. There can always be somebody who's a little bit quirky or odd. Somebody was telling me recently that they were in an interview once, and somebody said, how do you respond when something upsets you? And he said, well, when something upsets me, I try and work through the issue. I try and talk to somebody in a calm and collected manner. And the guy said, well, that's the wrong answer. You should get angry and mad and scream and yell. And so the guy was asking me, how would I know that that's the response this guy was looking for? Well, you wouldn't know that, right? Like, because people are weird. Like, people can say things that you wouldn't expect. But then there's also a question of, do I want to work for somebody who's going to scream and yell whenever they get mad? My answer is no. But does anybody else have questions? Yes.
So what do you do when you have multiple job offers and interviews and dates or when they're actually going to settle on the person may not be for a few weeks when the other ones are kind of settled right now?
So you've got a couple job opportunities in the air, hopefully a couple offers. You're waiting to hear from one offer, but the other one you've got to tell them before you get the next offer. That's one of those things where you can actually tell them, right? Like if that company really wants to hire you and you say, hey, you know, I've got this other offer on the table, I'd really rather work from you for say no to them, if I don't have anything else on the table? Is there a possibility you can make me an offer before and give them a deadline? If they really want you, it may motivate them to push their deadline up. Now, it's considered bad etiquette to take the first thing that comes along and then still keep applying for jobs. And the reason is, if you then go back to that first company that you said, yes, I'll come work for you, and say, I'm not going to come work for you, that may stick around. Things get around. It's a relatively small world. If I know that you're the guy who's going to tell me you're going to come work for me and then back out, it doesn't really reflect well on you. That's not to say people don't do it. It happens. But it's generally not considered the best job search I can. Yeah.
Job and try to negotiate for more money.
Particularly, because you asked about government jobs, probably not. In a government job, particularly a federal government job, if there is an opening and that's the salary range I have, that is what it's going to be a lot of work on my end, paperwork-wise, and it may or may not be possible for you to pay. Even within a company, if I have budgeted X number of dollars to pay for a particular position, I can't necessarily then find the money in my budget to pay more money. So generally not, generally it's going to be what's in that.
Can you guys pass this all the way back to her?
Okay.
When you go in for an interview, should you be prepared to like take notes? Do you need to bring paper and a pen in case they have important information that you want to remember, or is it more verbal?
So the question is whether I can take notes. And that's going to be a personal preference thing. If you want to take notes, that's fine. I recommend not doing it on like a crumpled up sheet of paper, right? Like bring a nice little notepad, either something small, and don't spend the whole time writing down notes, right? Jotting down a word or two, but not interrupting the conversation is fine.
I've had 3 different interviews in the past 2 months, and every time I've got asked, am I able to relocate? And when I tell them I'm area restricted, it's just kind of like immediately game over, and they always ask why, and as soon as I tell them why, it's just shut down immediately. Is there a way to handle that differently, or?
So the question is, when they ask whether or not you're able to relocate, if the answer is that you're restricted, sometimes that's going to be a non-starter for them, and what can you do about that? I think what I would do is, in the context of an interview, say something along the lines of, I would relocate for the right opportunity. Okay? So you may still be restricted. That still in your head might mean, I'm willing to live in 3 cities. Right? But don't tell them that. If you get further along in the application process, I learn more about you, I decide I want you more, and then I find out you're only going to come work for me if I let you work in one of these 3 cities, I'm more likely to try and make that if I've already convinced myself I want. So something like that may be a little bit better of an approach to take. But at the same time, if the 3 cities you are restricted to are not 3 cities that I can offer that job in, that could be possible.
Oh, you're
fine.
You were talking about practicing speaking about yourself in mock interviews. You mentioned a resource online.
Toastmasters is it's a group, and it's not. They have a website, but they also do a lot of meetings. Generally, there are chapters pretty much everywhere. Universities will often have a chapter, if not multiple chapters. I've never gone to a Toastmasters meeting myself, but I've heard really great things from them for folks who have.
Could you expand a little bit maybe on some strategies if you're in a negotiation and they offer you something that's pretty much well below what you're expecting? How do you negotiate that up without being too confrontational or breaking your back and asking for too much?
I think the thing really is to come with some research. But, based on what on X, Y, and Z, I was expecting the salary range to be closer to, and then naming a number. And see how they respond to that. And again, you can say without being confrontational, why aren't you paying more? I was expecting a salary range closer to $80,000 to $100,000.
But it's going to be more, what I'm hearing you say is it's going to be more based on company precedence rather than what you think you are worth skill-wise or quality.
So it's about hoping to find that fit between the two, right? Certainly you should know about what you would like to be paid and what you think you're worth.
but that company is also going to have some amount. Sometimes there's more flexibility. There are times when they'll call, bring you in for an interview, you ask for more money, and they say, I can pay you that money. But in order to do that, I have to change the job slightly to give you more responsibilities, because within our organization, to make that much money, you have to be in this pay grade. And if you're in this pay grade, it then says that you have to have these responsibilities. So it might be like to be in a certain pay grade, you have to have management responsibilities, for example.
So now I'll just add one thing. If you're applying for academia, where the negotiation is not only about salary, it's about lab space, it's about students, it's about teaching, the strategy is if you say no to one thing, you'll most likely have to say yes to the second one. So it depends on what you can live with. If you want, you put your department chair in the tent. Like if you say, all right, I'll take the lab space, but, and then you ask if you really want, because then he's not likely to say yes, because you just took his offer. So there's a lot of give and take, like a chess match, but I don't know how it is in companies.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit less room for that in big companies.
I'm sorry to take up the time, but so the chess matches happen that afternoon, and do you almost always say, okay, let me think of these things over. You think them over, then you want to still negotiate a little bit. Is it inappropriate is it to come back and say, well, I thought these things over?
Absolutely, you can go back.
And I want to change this or that and still keep gripping on to points, or you need to think it over and then say yes or no.
You know, I think you have the conversation and they say, well, here's the offer on the table right now. And generally they'll say, we'd like an answer by deadline.
And I was going to say, in academia, it's less, and say,
I thought about it, can we change this and that? Certainly.
In academia, it's more flexible because it's like a give and take by email between you and the chair, and then some things the VP of research have to sign on, so it just depends. There's no, like, you have to tell us right now, but you want to be prompt because you want to get that contract.
Yeah, in academia, I just always hear professors say they regret they didn't know this or that was on the table. You get these two chances to negotiate, and then hiring and then a tenure, and then that's it.
And it's true. You have to ask because this is your only chance of getting more lab space, more TAs, more, and you want to get it in writing. So
get it in writing.
In your contract, absolutely.
And things like teaching load,
you know, changing, relocation, credit hours, distribution of extension versus research, things like that. How many, you know, like if you can actually have some report forgiveness for teaching load, like I can give you a semester of forgiveness and then you teach later. So you can talk, you have to ask. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is saying, oh, this is not on the table. You want to remember that for academia, I'm sorry, I'm sticking on, but for academia, it's such an involved process between, like, you know, the job description and bringing it in. They're most likely to just change their minds at the last minute. They're not going to say, all right, we don't like that guy because he's asking too much questions. It's not going to happen.
They've already bought into it.
They bought into it. It's a lot of investment on their time on the university to bring you in and do the research and the interview and all that. So you can ask as much questions as you want.
Is there any way to anticipate raises? So you negotiate for a certain price, but you think you're
going to
get more.
So that can be a part of your negotiation. I'd like a review and a chance for a raise after 6 months instead of waiting an entire year. I would bring that up during the negotiation, because otherwise the standard is that they'll wait a year. But you can also ask that, what do raises typically look like in this company? How often do they come? And knowing that they can't always predict that. You know, in the last couple of years, a lot of companies that don't normally have salary increases.
Salary negotiations, when and how is it appropriate to bring up questions about what kind of benefits and what kind of
as soon as an offer's on the table, you can ask about benefits. I would refrain from asking about benefits until an offer's on the table. Right? So you don't want to ask about vacation time or maternity leave.
say she's going to have another workshop later about balancing life and career. You're going to need to know what to do. No more drinking every Thursday and Saturday. And Wednesday, Tuesday, and Monday.
Good luck. Sorry, I don't have a better answer for you.
I don't know. Yeah. So we're running a few minutes late, we're going to start. Could you just hand me my notes? I'm just going to introduce you. All right, so how many of you were here before for the previous workshops? All right, so there are new people, so we're going to introduce Brianna Blazer. She's going to talk today about work-life balance, finding what works for you. Brianna is the project director of the outreach program for the science career. She has a BS in math and psychology. She has a minor in gender studies from Carnegie Mellon, so she's well hooked up. And then she has internship with the Association for Women in Science and the National Institute of Standards and Technology, so her resources are very valuable, so I would recommend you listen to her, ask her questions, see how she can help you, and if you have questions, direct them to Brianna.